Hello and welcome to Sound Body, a weekly program of information on health topics and ideas that can help you live life to its fullest. I'm Louise Craig. With little public scrutiny, insurers and data brokers are predicting your health costs based on data such as your race, marital status, how much TV you watch, whether you pay your bills on time, or purchase plus-size clothing. Medical devices such as CPAPs and heart monitors are also being used to glean your information for advertisers and insurers. Welcome to this world of Big Brother, surveillance of your everyday life that may be used in ways you won't like. We are reading two articles today, both from a joint ProPublica NPR series titled Health Insurance Hustle, that investigates the games, side deals, and hidden incentives that often result in higher costs, delays in care, or denials of treatment. And we will start with this first ProPublica article titled Your Medical Devices Are Not Keeping Your Health Data to Themselves. This is written by Derek Kravitz and Marshall Allen and published on November 2, 2018 in both ProPublica and NPR. Medical devices are gathering more and more data from their users, whether it's their heart rates, sleep patterns, or the number of steps taken in a day. Insurers and medical device makers say such data can be used to vastly improve healthcare. But the data that's generated can also be used in ways that patients don't necessarily expect. It can be packaged and sold for advertising. It can be anonymized and used by customer support and information technology companies. Or it can be shared with health insurers who may use it to deny reimbursement. Privacy experts warn that data gathered by insurers could also be used to rate individuals' healthcare costs and potentially raise their premiums. Patients typically have to give consent for their data to be used, so-called donated data. But some patients said they weren't aware that their information was being gathered and shared. And once the data is shared, it can be used in a number of ways. Here are a few of the most popular medical devices that can share data with insurers. Continuous positive airway pressure or CPAP machines. One of the more popular devices for those with sleep apnea, CPAP machines are covered by insurers after a sleep study confirms the diagnosis. These units, which deliver pressurized air through masks worn by patients as they sleep, collect data and transmit it wirelessly. It depends on the unit, but CPAP machines can collect data on the number of hours a patient uses the device, the number of interruptions in sleep, and the amount of air that leaks from the mask. The data may be transmitted to the makers or suppliers of the machines. Doctors may use it to assess whether the therapy is effective. Health insurers may receive the data to track whether patients are using their CPAP machines as directed. They may refuse to reimburse the costs of the machine if the patient doesn't use it enough. The device maker, ResMed, said in a statement that patients may withdraw their consent to have their data shared. Heart monitors. Heart monitors, oftentimes small battery-powered devices worn on the body and attached to the skin with electrodes, measure and record the heart's electrical signals, typically over a few days or weeks, to detect things like irregular heartbeats or abnormal heart rhythms. Some devices implanted under the skin can last up to 5 years. Wearable ones include Holter monitors, wired external devices that attach to the skin, and event recorders, which can track slow or fast heartbeats and fainting spells. Data can also be shared from implanted pacemakers, which keep the heart beating properly for those with arrhythmias. Low resting heart rates or other abnormal heart conditions are commonly used by insurance companies to place patients in more expensive rate classes. Children undergoing genetic testing are sometimes outfitted with heart monitors before their diagnosis, increasing the odds that their data is used by insurers. This sharing is the most common complaint cited by the World Privacy Forum, a consumer rights group. blood glucose monitors. Millions of Americans who have diabetes are familiar with blood glucose meters or glucometers, which take a blood sample on a strip of paper and analyze it for glucose or sugar levels. This allows patients and their doctors to monitor their diabetes so they don't have complications like heart or kidney disease. Blood glucose meters are used by the more than 1.2 million Americans with type 1 diabetes, which is usually diagnosed in children, teens, and young adults. Blood sugar monitors measure the concentration of glucose in a patient's blood, a key indicator of proper diabetes management. Diabetes monitoring equipment is sold directly to patients, but many still rely on insurer-provided devices. To get reimbursement for blood glucose meters, health insurers will typically ask for at least a month's worth of blood sugar data. Lifestyle monitors. Step counters, medication alerts and trackers, and in-home cameras are among the devices in the increasingly crowded lifestyle health industry. Many health data research apps are made up of donated data, which is provided by consumers and falls outside of federal guidelines that require the sharing of personal health data be disclosed and anonymized to protect the identity of the patient. This data includes everything from counters for the number of steps you take, the calories you eat, and the number of flights of stairs you climb, to more traditional health metrics such as pulse and heart rates. Who gets the info? It varies by device. But the makers of the Fitbit step counter, for example, say they never sell customer personal data or share personal information unless a user requests it. It is part of a legal process, or it is provided on a confidential basis to a third-party customer support or IT provider. That said, Fitbit allows users who give consent to share data with a health insurer or wellness program, according to a statement from the company. Our next article and last article, also from ProPublica NPR, written by Marshall Allen, is titled, Health Insurers Are Vacuuming Up Details About You, and It Could Raise Your Rates. To an outsider, the fancy booths at last month's health insurance industry gathering in San Diego aren't very compelling. A handful of companies pitching lifestyle data and salespeople touting jargony phrases like social determinants of health. But dig deeper, and the implications of what they're selling might give many patients pause. A future in which everything you do, the things you buy, the food you eat, the time you spend watching TV, may help determine how much you pay for health insurance. With little public scrutiny, the health insurance industry has joined forces with data brokers to vacuum up personal details about hundreds of millions of Americans, including, odds are, many readers of this story. The companies are tracking your race, education level, TV habits, marital status, net worth. They're collecting what you post on social media, whether you're behind on your bills, what you order online. Then they feed this information into complicated computer algorithms that spit out predictions about how much your healthcare could cost them. Are you a woman who recently changed your name? You could be newly married and have a pricey pregnancy pending. Or maybe you're stressed and anxious from a recent divorce. That too, the computer models predict, may run up your medical bills. Are you a woman who's purchased plus-size clothing? You're considered at risk of depression. Mental health care can be expensive. Low income and a minority? That means, the data brokers say, you are more likely to live in a dilapidated and dangerous neighborhood, increasing your health risks. We sit on oceans of data, said Eric McCauley, Director of Strategic Solutions for LexisNexis Risk Solutions, during a conversation at the data firm's booth. And he isn't apologetic about using it. The fact is, our data is in the public domain, he said. We didn't put it out there. Insurers contend they use the information to spot health issues in their clients and flag them so they get services they need. And companies like LexisNexis say the data shouldn't be used to set prices. But as a research scientist from one company told me, I can't say it hasn't happened. At a time when every week brings a new privacy scandal and worries abound about the misuse of personal information, patient advocates and privacy scholars say the insurance industry's data gathering runs counter to its touted and federally required allegiance to patients' medical privacy. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, or HIPAA, only protects medical information. "We have a health privacy machine that's in crisis," said Frank Pascal, a professor at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law, who specializes in issues related to machine learning and algorithms. "We have a law that only covers one source of health information. They are rapidly developing another source." Patient advocates warn that using unverified, error-prone lifestyle data to make medical assumptions could lead insurers to improperly price plans. For instance, raising rates based on false information, or discriminate against anyone tagged as high cost. And, they say, the use of the data raises thorny questions that should be debated publicly, such as: should a person's rates be raised because algorithms say they are more likely to run up medical bills? Such questions would be moot in Europe, where a strict law took effect in May that bans trading in personal data. This year, ProPublica and NPR are investigating the various tactics the health insurance industry uses to maximize its profits. Understanding these strategies is important because patients, through taxes, cash payments, and insurance premiums, are the ones funding the entire healthcare system. Yet the industry's bewildering web of strategies and inside deals often have little to do with patients' needs. And as the series' first story showed, contrary to popular belief, lower bills aren't health insurers' top priority. Inside the San Diego Convention Center last month, there were few qualms about the way insurance companies were mining Americans' lives for information, or what they planned to do with the data. The sprawling convention center was a balmy draw for one of Americans' health insurance plan's marquee gatherings. Insurance executives and managers wandered through the exhibit hall, sampling chocolate-covered strawberries, champagne, and other delectables designed to encourage deal-making. Up front, the prime real estate belonged to the big guns in health data. The booths of Optum, IBM Watson Health, and LexisNexis stretched toward the ceiling, with flat-screen monitors and some comfy seating. NPR collaborates with IBM Watson Health on national polls about consumer health topics. To understand the scope of what they were offering, consider Optum. The company, owned by the massive United Health Group, has collected the medical diagnoses, tests, prescriptions, costs, and socioeconomic data of 150 million Americans going back to 1993, according to its marketing materials. United Health Group provides financial support to NPR. The company says it uses the information to link patients' medical outcomes and costs to details like their level of education, net worth, family structure, and race. An Optum spokesman said the socioeconomic data is de-identified and is not used for pricing health plans. Optum's marketing materials also boast that it now has access to even more. In 2016, the company filed a patent application to gather what people share on platforms like Facebook and Twitter, and link this material to the person's clinical and payment information. A company spokesman said in an email that the patent application never went anywhere, but the company's current marketing materials say it combines claims and clinical information with social media interactions. I had a lot of questions about this and first reached out to Optum in May, but the company didn't connect me with any of its experts as promised. At the conference, Optum salespeople said they weren't allowed to talk to me about how the company uses this information. It isn't hard to understand the appeal of all this data to insurers. Merging information from data brokers with people's clinical and payment records is a no-brainer if you overlook potential patient concerns. Electronic medical records now make it easy for insurers to analyze massive amounts of information and combine it with the personal details scooped up by data brokers. It also makes sense given the shifts in how providers are getting paid. Doctors and hospitals have typically been paid based on the quantity of care they provide, but the industry is moving toward paying them in lump sums for caring for a patient or for an event like a knee surgery. In those cases, the medical providers can profit more when patients stay healthy. More money at stake means more interest in the social factors that might affect a patient's health. Some insurance companies are already using socioeconomic data to help patients get appropriate care, such as programs to help patients with chronic diseases stay healthy. Studies show social and economic aspects of people's lives play an important role in their health. Knowing these personal details can help them identify those who may need help paying for medication or help getting to the doctor. But patient advocates are skeptical health insurers have altruistic designs on people's personal information. The industry has a history of boosting profits by signing up healthy people and finding ways to avoid sick people, called cherry-picking and lemon-dropping, experts say. Among the classic examples, a company was accused of putting its enrollment office on the third floor of a building without an elevator, so only healthy patients could make the trek to sign up. Another tried to appeal to spry seniors by holding square dances. The Affordable Care Act prohibits insurers from denying people coverage based on pre-existing health conditions or charging sick people more for individual or small group plans. But experts said patients' personal information could still be used for marketing and to assess risks and determine the prices of certain plans. And the Trump administration is promoting short-term health plans, which do allow insurers to deny coverage to sick patients. Robert Greenwald, faculty director of Harvard Law School's Center for Health Law and Policy Innovation, said insurance companies still cherry-pick, but now they're subtler. The center analyzes health insurance plans to see if they discriminate. He said insurers will do things like failing to include enough information about which drugs a plan covers, which pushes sick people who need specific medications elsewhere. Or they may change the things a plan covers, or how much a patient has to pay for a type of care after a patient has enrolled. Or, Greenwald added, they might exclude or limit certain types of providers from their networks, like those who have skill caring for patients with HIV or hepatitis C. If there were concerns that personal data might be used to cherry-pick or lemon-drop, they weren't raised at the conference. The LexisNexis booth was emblazoned with the slogan, Data, Insight, Action. The company said it uses 442 non-medical personal attributes to predict a person's medical costs. Its cache includes more than 78 billion records from more than 10,000 public and proprietary sources, including people's cell phone numbers, criminal records, bankruptcies, property records, neighborhood safety, and more. The information is used to predict patients' health risks and costs in eight areas, including how often they are likely to visit emergency rooms, their total cost, their pharmacy costs, their motivation to stay healthy, and their stress levels. People who downsize their homes tend to have higher health care costs, the company says, as do those whose parents didn't finish high school. Patients who own more valuable homes are less likely to land back in the hospital within 30 days of their discharge. The company says it has validated its scores against insurance claims and clinical data, but it won't share its methods and hasn't published the work in peer-reviewed journals. Macaulay, LexisNexis's director of strategic solutions, said predictions made by the algorithms about patients are based on the combination of the personal attributes. He gave a hypothetical example. A high school dropout who had a recent income loss and doesn't have a relative nearby might have higher than expected health costs. But couldn't that same type of person be healthy? I asked. Sure, Macaulay said, with no apparent dismay at the possibility that the predictions could be wrong. Before the conference, I'd seen a press release announcing that the largest health actuarial firm in the world, Milliman, was now using the LexisNexis scores. I tracked down Marcus Dacquery, who works in business development for Milliman. Actuaries calculate healthcare risks and help set the price of premiums for insurers. I asked Dacquery if Milliman was using the LexisNexis scores to price health plans, and he said there could be an opportunity. The scores could allow an insurance company to assess the risks posed by individual patients and make adjustments to protect themselves from losses, he said. For example, the company could raise premiums or revise contracts with providers. It's too early to tell whether the LexisNexis scores will actually be useful for pricing, he said, but he was excited about the possibilities. One thing about social determinants data, it piques your mind, he said. Dacquery acknowledged the scores could also be used to discriminate. Others, he said, have raised that concern. As much as there could be positive potential, he said, there could also be negative potential. It's that negative potential that still bothers data analyst Aaron Kaufman, who left the health insurance industry in January. The 35-year-old from Atlanta had earned her doctorate in public health because she wanted to help people. But one day at Aetna, her boss told her to work with a new data set. To her surprise, the company had obtained personal information from a data broker on millions of Americans. The data contained each person's habits and hobbies, like whether they owned a gun, and if so, what type, she said. It included whether they had magazine subscriptions, liked to ride bikes or run marathons. It had hundreds of personal details about each person. The Aetna data team merged the data with the information it had on patients it insured. The goal was to see how people's personal interests and hobbies might relate to their healthcare costs. But Kaufman said it felt wrong. The information about the people who knitted or crocheted made her think of her grandmother, and the details about individuals who liked camping made her think of herself. What business did the insurance company have looking at this information? It was a data set that really dug into our clients' lives, she said. No one gave anyone permission to do this. In a statement, Aetna said it uses consumer marketing information to supplement its claims and clinical information. The combined data helps predict the risk of repeat emergency room visits or hospital admissions. The information is used to reach out to members and help them and plays no role in pricing plans or underwriting, the statement said. Kaufman said she had concerns about the accuracy of drawing inferences about an individual's health from an analysis of a group of people with similar traits. Health scores generated from arrest records, home ownership, and similar material may be wrong, she said. Pam Dixon, executive director of the World Privacy Forum, a nonprofit that advocates for privacy in the digital age, shares Kaufman's concerns. She points to a study by the analytics company SAS, which worked in 2012 with an unnamed major health insurance company to predict a person's healthcare costs using 1,500 data elements, including the investments and types of cars people owned. The SAS study said higher healthcare costs could be predicted by looking at things like ethnicity, watching TV, and mail order purchases. I find that enormously offensive as a list, Dixon said. This is not health data, this is inferred data. Data scientist Kathy O'Neill said drawing conclusions about health risks on such data could lead to a bias against some poor people. It would be easy to infer they are prone to costly illnesses based on their backgrounds and living conditions, said O'Neill, author of the book Weapons of Math Destruction, which looked at how algorithms can increase inequality. That could lead to poor people being charged more, making it harder for them to get the care they need, she said. Employers, she said, could even decide not to hire people with data points that could indicate high medical costs in the future. O'Neill said the company should also measure how the scores might discriminate against the poor, sick, or minorities. American policymakers could do more to protect people's information, experts said. In the United States, companies can harvest personal data unless a specific law bans it, although California just passed legislation that could create restrictions, said William McGeverin, a professor at the University of Minnesota Law School. Europe, in contrast, passed a strict law called the General Data Protection Regulation, which went into effect in May. In Europe, data protection is a constitutional right, McGeverin said. Pascal, the University of Maryland law professor, said health scores should be treated like credit scores. Federal law gives people the right to know their credit scores and how they're calculated. If people are going to be rated by whether they listen to sad songs on Spotify or look up information about AIDS online, they should know, Pascal said. The risk of improper use is extremely high, and data scores are not properly vetted and validated and available for scrutiny. As I reported this story, I wondered how the data vendors might be using my personal information to score my potential health costs. So I filled out a request on the LexisNexis website for the company to send me some of the personal information it has on me. A week later, a somewhat creepy 182-page walk down memory lane arrived in the mail. Federal law only requires the company to provide a subset of the information it collected about me, so that's all I got. LexisNexis had captured details about my life going back 25 years, many that I'd forgotten. It had my phone numbers going back decades and my home addresses going back to my childhood in Golden, Colorado. Each location had a field to show whether the address was high risk. Mine were all blank. The company also collects records of any liens and criminal activity, which thankfully I didn't have. My report was boring, which isn't a surprise. I've lived a middle-class life and grown up in good neighborhoods. But it made me wonder, what if I had lived in high-risk neighborhoods? Could that ever be used by insurers to jack up my rates or to avoid me altogether? I wanted to see more. If LexisNexis had health risk scores on me, I wanted to see how they were calculated, and more importantly, whether they were accurate. But the company told me that if it had calculated my scores, it would have done so on behalf of their client, my insurance company. So, I couldn't have them. And I thank you for tuning in to Sound Body today. Stay well, and come back next week for more healthy living ideas. This has been Sound Body, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. I'm Louise Craig, and I hope you'll join me again next week for more health updates and information for healthy living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.